did you say it's Norwegian Constitution Day?
I was going to say it's Norwegian Constitution Day. Wow.
That's exciting. Congratulations, Norway.
Norway. Now all you gotta do is free yourself from your petty monarchy. Good luck.
Welcome to Direct-to-Video VHS. A podcast where we pair movies like fine wine. The thing about Norway's monarchy is 100% going to be the cold open. I can't do anything else.
What do we watch today?
We watched The Plague Dogs.
The Plague Dogs.
Which is the second movie from
Martin Rosen, I think is his name.
It's the second movie from this company that, and it was also based on a Richard Adams book. And it was bit of a downer. But I thought, I don't know if you agree with me on this, much more like followable than
yes,
Watership Down. Like a much more relatable, understandable story.
It's a movie, is what I would argue that this is actually a movie and not like a weird Reading Rainbow segment for adults.
Damn, but that other thing sounds more fun though.
It sure does. And I will say, Watership Down, I think, was definitely like, I don't know, less dour. I know Watership Down has like this reputation of being like just a fucked up movie, but...
Well, and that's a fascinating thing. It is in levels of blood and unsettling scenes, a more mm-hmm. fucked up movie. But this movie is more dour. Like,
well, Tony, a man shoots himself in the face with a shotgun.
Okay, so Andy, I understand why you might find that dour, but I could not stop laughing. Like, that felt like it was a scene out of a black comedy. This guy's just like, oh, look at this dog. Come here, dog. And then the dog runs toward him and is like jumping on him, right? And I guess accidentally pulls the trigger. I was like, why was that safety off, sir? The gun was pointed at your face. Blows his face off. And then for the rest of the movie, there's at least one or two people who's like, those dogs killed that farmer.
I gotta say, I don't know what Richard Adams's relationship is with the country folk of Scotland or wherever this movie takes place.
I thought it was Wales, but it could be anywhere.
It says Northwest England.
Great. So I guess we're just both wrong. I think you're closer.
Yeah. Whatever the fuck. This guy thinks that like English country people are like the dumbest and also, like, most revenge-driven human beings on the planet. The way that they talk about this, like, an animal, right?
Right, right, right.
It killed him on purpose is basically what they're saying. Yeah.
And like, I understood. I, like, wrote in my notes, if they start killing sheep, that's going to be a problem. Like,
that's going to be a huge problem.
It's going to be a huge problem. These farmers are going to hunt them down and kill them because killing sheep is basically the one thing you can't let a dog do.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the fact that a man gets shot in the face and it's at least a little bit, the dogs are at least a little bit like full on blamed for it, is like so silly that it actually stopped being so dour for me.
at one point, there's a guy right there in the bar where he's like, if the coroner had at least mentioned the dog,
then the cops would have to do something about it.
He's
like, did you hear that the coroner called it an accident? And the other guy was like, well, it is an accident the dog didn't shoot him. Yeah, but if he'd said the dog did it, the police would have to kill the dogs. Like, okay, dude, what are you talking about?
This movie starts with a first-person perspective of a dog drowning.
Can I actually hit you before the movie starts?
Yeah.
What version of this movie did you watch?
You know, I believe I watched the extended version.
I think I also watched the extended version because that was what the YouTube video called it. It's on YouTube. 75-minute extended cut. This is some...
Oh, whoa. Mine was way longer than that.
Oh, really? Interesting.
I think mine was 85 minutes.
85. Was my extended cut shorter than your extended cut? Oh, did you see the, did you see the bounty hunter? The bounty hunter slash assassin? Did you see him get torn apart?
Yeah. Wait. Like, I didn't see him get torn apart, but I saw the aftermath shot.
Okay. I heard that was a scene that was a cut scene. And I was like, oh man, well, it's not in the extended version. Anyway, yes, this also a little bit before the start of this movie, because this is an older movie, so it has the, credits beforehand. It plays like a horror movie trailer.
What do you mean?
There's this song, which I should have noted because they play it again at the end. It kind of sounds like a folk song or maybe even like a slave song.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what song you're talking about. The one that plays on the end credits.
It plays on the end credits and it plays here and it's kind of slow and it made me think of those, like, every movie trailer that's like a slow cover of a song.
Oh, yeah.
So you know something spooky's gonna happen. And then it goes from that into a drowning dog.
Which is pretty spooky.
I mean, yeah, it is pretty spooky. Nim wishes they were half as bad as these guys.
Oh my god. These guys make Nim look like PETA. They are, sorry, okay, real quick. I tried to read the book for this because I was like, oh, well, I think it would be interesting to read the book and like note maybe some of the differences. And I got to tell you, this book is also really fucking sad.
Oh, no.
And I got about 16, hold on, how far did I have the exact percentage because I was reading it on my phone. I got 17% of the way through the book. And I was like, you know what? I'll just watch the movie. But I did get some pretty interesting stuff from the author's note at the beginning of the book.
Mm-hmm.
But the way he describes these scientists, it's poetic in like their like pettiness, which is that like they are he describes one of the scientists as being less concerned with his actions or answers and more concerned with finding interesting questions.
I do like that.
It's really good. It's a very poetically written novel. I'm not accustomed to reading. I don't know if he wrote Watership Down this way. I'm not accustomed to reading such flowery language attributed to animal-like perspective books.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more used to the kind of material literalism of like a Jack London novel.
Sure. But I think I do think that's what makes these different from a Jack London.
The something that this book did that Jack London never did in any of his books is it will jump out of the perspective of the dogs into the perspective of like nearby people or like a god's eye view of like what the town is feeling.
That was actually one of my favorite parts of this movie. It took me a long time actually to catch.
Yeah.
To catch them doing it and catch how much I actually enjoyed it. We always see things from the dog's perspective. We're always looking at what the dogs are looking at, but we will hear things from the human's perspective. So the dogs will be like walking around hunting sheep or whatever, and we'll just hear humans talking about these dogs and their escape and the things that they're doing and like, oh, somebody from the news came in. Like, this is turning into a national news story. Stuff like that.
And then, like, we'll hear the news reports. It felt very Stephen King. I don't know how to explain it. If you've ever read Carrie.
I forget. Because I don't think I have fully read Carrie. I think I've read parts of it. Is the story of Carrie only told through the perspective of stuff like newspapers, or is it that it's set up with like newspapers and stuff and that tells it from her point of view?
It's interstitial. It's both. Okay. So it will, in between chapters and other segments, intercut with like news stories and like police reports and other and like diary entries and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very It's kind of written in a very Dracula style. I forget what the word for that is. I would know it if it was like 2 weeks ago. But yeah, it reminds me of that because it's a great way. It's like such a good shortcut for allowing us to know what the fuck is going on in, like, the world of man, as it were.
Yeah, it makes the audience understand the stakes of this movie in a way that the dogs can't. Mm-hmm. Like, they never understand the stakes of this movie. But back to this first scene. So this dog is drowning, right?
Sure is.
The scientists are testing his endurance and trying to increase his water endurance, the water endurance of this dog. And this can't be the best way to do it, to have a dog swim until it drowns and then fish it out and resuscitate it to the point where it needs like a breathing tube.
Yeah, into yeah, the night. To pump air into his lungs.
Yeah, seems bad.
I can't imagine it is, but one of the things that I think Richard Adams mentioned in his like intro is that a lot of the tests that the book describes are either tests that were done or tests that were proposed. So I don't know if this was if this was a test that was done or proposed. I can't imagine a scientist in like the 70s being like, yeah, what if we just, you know, put it in a tank for increasing periods of time.
The other day, I feel like this could be worth mentioning for this movie. The other day, I looked up, I don't know if you ever heard this myth. I looked up the myth of, do fish feel pain?
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought to myself, wait, do fish feel pain? Is that a real thing or just a thing I've heard? Mm-hmm. And the answer is, it's just a thing I've heard. And there's no scientific evidence to say that fish would feel any differently than any other animal. Mm-hmm. But what it is that for a long time, people decided that no other animals feel pain because, correct, like, who cares, I guess? And which seems like such an unreasonable way to look at the world, but I feel like people did, and it allowed them to be as cruel as they could possibly imagine.
I this comes a little bit from this, like, I think this, like, it's not really a Catholic idea, but it was really, like, taken by some Catholic doctrine as being, like, true, which is that, like, the extent of what it means to be sentient is your capacity to suffer. And so if animals can't suffer, then they can't be sentient, and then therefore they can't be human.
Mm.
So I do think it was one of those things where it was just, like, I think of it a lot in terms of, and I don't think this is like an apt comparison, but I do think it's like a reasonable one, which is, I think it kind of falls in line a little bit with like the arguments people made to justify why certain humans it was okay to enslave. You're already doing it. You're already doing a thing that you know is bad. And so what you want is moral high ground justification.
Yeah, a reason why it's not bad, actually. Don't ask me mm-hmm. about it.
Correct.
Yeah, and I just think that's probably why tests like this have happened in the past.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause they could say, well, we're not drowning humans, are we? This place, which, by the way, I don't know if you picked up on this. I didn't pick up on this. I found out later. Is called Arse.
Yes, correct. That's right.
Is, like, so evil. Like, they're doing all these crazy tests. They're drowning this one dog, this the other dog. So this dog is the first dog we see is Rolf, who's yes. a Labrador mix. He's a big black dog. And the second main character is Snitter, who's a fox terrier who has yeah. some kind of surgical head wound. So you know that they're getting up to not only, like, bad shit, but, like, a lot of different shit in this place. Because they also have, like, monkeys and rats and a bunch yeah. of other dogs. They're running a bunch of experiments for probably no reason than, like, I wonder what we can do to these dogs.
Yeah, we have all this funding. We have all these dogs. Let's figure out a thing to do with them.
Yeah. So then, as the dogs are getting fed, the guy who comes by to feed them, who genuinely, and I think this is one of the more, I don't want to say harsher, but it makes it a little bit sad and more realistic. Genuinely seems like an okay guy. the guy who comes to feed them.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like a normal human guy who in his normal life would not torture dogs and does not torture dogs here, but works at a place that tortures dogs. It's not like he doesn't know about it. It's just like, this is his job.
There are very few characters in this, very, very few humans that are painted in like a negative light.
Mm-hmm.
I think it really is just the head scientist, the one who later helps give the title to this movie.
Yes.
But like this, yeah, this guy, it's one of those things where it's like he's complicit, but also like he has to work for a living.
But there's even like, yeah, there's later, we never see this guy, but we hear him. There's later a like lower level scientist who just sounds like kind of a bumbling dipshit. And it's like,
yeah,
it's funny to me that there's like so little in the way of evil here that's not just casual human evil, which is probably what makes this feel like such a bleak movie. It's like one of the big selling points. So yeah, this dog is mostly drowned, but this guy accidentally leaves the cage open. Like he closes it too quick and it bounces off the latch.
Yeah, I've done this before.
Yeah, absolutely. So he and so this dog Rolf and his buddy Snitter are able to escape.
And they kind of bumble their way through a lot of the labs, and we get to see like different rat experiments, different monkey experiments.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ones that isn't in this movie, I think because I don't think they would have been able to do it justice, but I thought was kind of weird, was in the book, they go through like an aviary.
Oh.
Where they have a bunch of pigeons in these like hermetically sealed boxes. And like some of the boxes are always dark. Some of the boxes are always day. Some of the boxes have like a fake constellation system on the roof of them that the birds can see. And like they raise these birds from like chicks in these boxes just to let them go and see what happens. Like, are they going to be able to migrate?
This sounds like the kind of experiment that like an animal psychologist would really, really like want to do in the back of their mind, but also know it would be horrible.
Yeah. The book is like most of these birds will end up just flying into the sea. Again, it's not a happy time.
So these dogs get out through the incinerator, which is a very intense scene. And let me tell you one of the things about this movie that did kind of leave me on the edge of my seat. The whole time I was like, I have no idea if this is the kind of movie where these dogs are going to die.
Yeah, it really teases you
throughout
the film with like, well, one of these dogs is probably going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And like constantly changing places between Ralph and Snitter.
Right.
Which one is the most in danger?
So they get out and they're kind of tepid on how great that is. Like they love not being in there, but they don't know where to get food and stuff like that. And then Snitter falls asleep. He has this dream. The dream sequences in this are cool. They're all in black and white.
Yeah.
Except I do think there's red in this dream too. Obviously, well, yeah, like because you do. Snitter.
He hears his owner's like walking stick tapping along the sidewalk. So he like jumps the fence to go greet him. But when he goes to run across the street, there's like a car coming and his owner like runs over to pick him up and throw him out of the way, gets hit by the car and eats it. He's gone. His soul leaves his body. And then a woman screams.
Okay. It is my opinion that this last bit has to only be in Snitter's mind.
We can never know. But a woman does scream. It was the dog. The dog killed him.
When like anybody would be like, wow, this guy died saving his dog.
His dog. Yeah.
This would be like on the news as like, oh, what a horrible tragedy, but also almost uplifting.
Yeah. Like this man loved his dog so much. And then there would be like a who wants to adopt this beautiful, poor little dog.
Right. But I guess instead this dog got adopted by this evil institute. So yeah, they could... Yeah. dig into his brain. Because he's a murderer, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they're trying to figure out the twisted mind of this serial killer dog.
I mean, he is kind of a serial killer dog. Snitter is the... He's like the main character in a black comedy, and he doesn't realize it. Like, he's in like a Coen movie.
Yeah, that's true. They wake up and they make their way into like a small town nearby.
Mm-hmm.
They get heckled by some people for digging through their trash, and then they make their way over to like a butcher shop. But because the butcher is wearing like a white apron, they're like, "Oh fuck, the scientists are after us."
Andy has a knife, and they appear to kind of know what a knife is. I think the problem is that Snitter is a city dog. He thinks a shop looks like a certain thing that does not look like a shop in the outskirts, the middle of nowhere, wherever the fuck they are.
Yeah.
It's not clear what Rolf got up to before all of this. Maybe nothing? Was he raised by these scientists? I don't know. He doesn't seem to know shit about shit, though.
Yeah, it really seems like he just has always been there. Eventually, Snitter gives up on trying to find them new owners.
Oh, not yet, because first they see these sheep, and the sheepdogs chase them, right? And they're like, Snitter's like, I got it. Here's the thing. I actually love this scene. It's like, again, such a comedy of errors. They could have gotten new owners, probably, right here. But they didn't. He sees the dogs chasing a sheep, and he's like, ah, okay, this is like when they throw balls and sticks. Dogs out here chase sheep, so we're going to do that. And they start chasing a sheep, and of course start like a sheep stampede, and the dogs start yelling at them in heavy, heavy North English accents that they can barely understand, which is so funny. That like part... I'm genuinely sure that part of the plot of this is that they can't understand these heavy accents.
Yeah, yeah.
And they one of the dog calls them tourists, which I was like, devastating.
Yeah.
It's after this that they're like, I guess we're not looking for a new owner.
They end up at like a, I don't know what to call it, other than a smaller Stonehenge.
Yeah, it's like a circle of stones, like some witches would be at.
What are these things called?
Standing stones, maybe?
I get. Yeah, yeah, you're right.
This is a not American thing.
No. Yeah, it's just a circle of standing stones. These are like all over Europe, apparently.
Megalithic sites. Yeah, I guess these were originally put up on purpose, and we just kind of like them.
Yeah.
So we leave them.
We leave them alone. That while they're there, Rolf starts saying, we need to like devolve. We need to become wild animals to survive.
Right.
And Snitter gets like visions of the stones turning into wolves.
I want to talk about Snitter for a second, because it's not until much, much later that this is mentioned. But I feel like it's worth mentioning that it turns out that the surgery in his brain is trying to, I think the quote was, turn the subjective into the objective.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're trying to give him super realistic visions based on just thoughts that he has. And the wild thing about it is that this is wholly useless to him as a character. I mean, like, it's just a bad thing for him. And I don't...
It makes him...
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes him almost like unmanageable as the movie goes on.
Yeah, sometimes he'll just fully like go into his own brain and be like, it's better this way. But I don't see why a scientist would do this, because like, how could you even tell what you've done has worked?
Right. One of the scientists in like an overview is talking to some woman, and he's like, and now we'll never get to know if the surgery worked. How would you know?
How would you ask
the dog?
That's nothing. What are you talking about? And so this, but the weird thing is it doesn't help him at all. I kept expecting it to be like Fiverr, where he would like have a vision that would be useful.
Yeah.
But all of his visions are just of his own thoughts.
And of his own, and also like of his own memories.
And his own memories.
When they occur to him.
And don't get me wrong, there's some good looking visions and like some of the best stuff in the movie because it's like weird when it happens. But it's just
cool
like.
As hell.
It's just so. The only way it adds to the plot is that it's just one more shitty thing for these dogs to have to deal with.
Yes, correct. Okay, they at this point, they are hungry enough that they kill a sheep.
Uh-huh.
And Roth gets absolutely, like, battered
by this
thing.
He got bodied
by the sheep. He got fucking owned. Which, yeah, I've seen a sheep. They can do that, no matter how small and fluffy they are.
They mention a little bit later that it was, like, a two-year-old sheep, like a grown, healthy sheep. Like, he didn't do what a smart wild animal would do, which is pick off one of the weak sheep. He went for like another big animal that could kick the shit out of him, and it kicked the shit out of him. They sure killed it though. There's definitely
they
a sheep
sure
carcass
did.
Over there.
They munch on it, and then as they're walking back, Roth is like, I can't keep walking. Like, I'm just too hurt and I'm too tired. And so he just lies down and falls asleep. Snitter kind of starts exploring around further and finds a mine shaft that he takes Roth to for them to like kind of just chill while the heavy rains subside. And around this time is when they meet the Todd.
Right. So the Todd lives in the mine shaft. There's a lot of stuff that I want to talk about with the Todd. He's the coolest character in this movie.
Such a good idea for a character.
At one point, he leaves, and I was like, there goes Todd, too smart for this movie. And then he comes back, like, two scenes later.
Yep.
He's a fox, and he basically tells them, you all are gonna die because you're so bad at this.
Mm-hmm.
And Rolf immediately is like, I don't trust this fox, and I don't see a reason why, except for racism.
Why Roth doesn't like him?
Why Roth doesn't like him.
Because like, Labradors are gun dogs.
Yes, but he's like, this is a thief. And I was like, okay. But Roth doesn't, he doesn't have the memory of like any of this. So he's just immediately like, nah.
Nah.
Nah, fuck that guy.
Yeah, I find it funny that Snitter, who's a fox terrier, a dog that hunts foxes, is totally cool with him.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, I get it. Ride or die. And the Todd does become ride or die fairly quickly. I kept wondering, is this fox going to betray them, or is this their like closest friend?
I got to a point in the movie where I was like, well, it's how could it betray them? It's an animal.
Yes, well, like, I mean, the one, there's a point where it's like, it's way too late for it to betray them. But at first, I was kind of wondering, like, okay, is he going to have them hunt in a way that would get them captured, but he'll just, like, be able to eat a bunch of dead sheep or something? But no, he teaches them to, like, be smart.
Yeah, how to run off, like, the older sheep, how to trick them into, like,
trick them into running off cliffs so you don't have to actually fight them, which is bad because you'll get fucked up.
Yeah, how to ambush them if you have to do that, right? Like, just a lot of different ways. But and they become so good at killing sheep, in fact, that every farmer and every sheep herder in the area is like, we gotta fucking kill the shit out of these dogs.
Well, there's this bit where Ralph kills a sheep, and Todd's like, what the fuck did you do? And he's like, I was hungry, I killed a sheep. And he's like, oh my god, the whole point is that you can't let them see you killing sheep. They're going to kill you. Every human is going to kill you. And then he leaves, and he comes back like two scenes later. I was like, and then they keep hunting sheep, and I was like, why? Stop hunting sheep.
Well, it's what else is there to eat, man? There's like a ton of them. There's so many.
They didn't even try for one of those deer. They haven't tried for any birds this whole time. The Todd eats some eggs, but
that's not true. The Todd teaches them how to hunt ducks and frogs, although they're bad at it.
So now we get this. I think we're up to this great, great scene.
Oh my god! One of the scientists calls in a favor? I have no idea how he knows this guy.
Yeah, I love this.
He's like a dog assassin.
That's what I called it. They called a dog assassin. He is also, according to like Wikipedia or whatever, he was called a bounty hunter. And I was like, that's still fucking wild. A dog bounty hunter.
That is that a dog, the bounty hunter. I think the craziest thing about this is we cut to him in his like shed or whatever. And he has like a bunch of newspaper clippings of like, terror dogs stopped.
Yes, yes,
evil
yes.
dogs finally put down. And I'm like, oh my god.
He's like fucking Charlie Day over here with his murder wall.
He's like Anton Chigurh from No Country for Old Men, but for dogs. It's for all you No Country for Old Men heads out there.
All you No Country for Old Men stands. They call them Old Men.
No.
I gotta say at this point, the rabbits were smart enough to leave when they made enemies, and they never once shot anyone in the face.
That's true. Although, God, that would have been amazing. It's around this time that Snitter wakes up in the middle of the night and on one of his like vision kicks. Mm-hmm. You also get, the movie does a really good job of showing you how like, as the movie goes on, Snitter's just getting worse.
Yes, it's bad for Snitter. I mean, I guess it probably makes sense. It's probably the connections in his brain are healing in some way, which means that however they fucked him up, it's getting fucked. Like,
yeah, it's like calcifying.
Right.
He just kind of wanders off into the middle of nowhere, and it gets spotted. And we've already described this scene, but like he gets spotted by some guy with a gun.
So there are some people in a little later in the scene, we realize they're duck hunting. So this guy was probably just like, oh, look, this dog got away from like the hunt or whatever. Oh, come here, buddy.
Well, and he sees the scar on his head.
Yeah.
And he's immediately like, oh, shit, like this dog must have fallen or something.
Yeah, something bad happened to this dog, which, yeah, totally.
Which, yes.
But this guy leaned his rifle in such a way. This has got to be impossible.
he leaned it on himself.
Pointing at his face, with the safety apparently not on. And this loaded. Dog, he gets the dog come to him, and we know Snare's an excitable dog. He apparently like jumped up, shot him in the face.
Yeah, pulled the trigger of the shotgun, and it eviscerated this man.
And then disappears for 2 days, just immediately is like, not again, I've killed again.
I've killed again. My hands, they're covered in blood. It will not wash away. Damn this foul spot. And fucking Roth just spends 2 days looking for him. Mm-hmm. And finally finds him in like an old, like rundown. I think it's a church, but it could be anything. It could just be a house. Who knows?
A barn, a house, a church, could be anything.
And the sinner just starts waxing. And Roth is like, hey. Just tell me how you feel. And Sinner just goes on and on about how he is evil, and even if he died, bad things would still happen because of him.
There's a crazy thing he says later. I didn't make note of it, but I should have. Later, when they're hunting them down, he says, ah, but if they kill me, the whole world will be destroyed. They haven't thought of that. And so, like,
we have that on them, at least.
And the other two are like, okay, Snitter.
All right, dude.
So these dogs, winter's come, right?
Yeah, winter is here.
Winter's here, so there's no more sheep or, like, even, like, pheasants or anything. Everything's gone. And they're out here, like, starving and freezing.
I love this because when the first snowfall happens, they're both like, oh, the white coats must have done this.
Yeah, to like find us.
Because look, we leave tracks in the snow. They'll be able to find us no matter where we go.
And then Ralph's like, ah, no, they were too smart for their own good. Look, it's covering up the tracks.
So good.
It's so good. So, but what happens here? After some time in the snow, some time not being able to find any sheep or any food, they're wandering, they're starving, and in comes the assassin, and behind
Dog the bounty hunter,
behind the assassin is Todd, who I wrote in my notes, Todd the dog assassin. And you know what? I shouldn't have even hoped.
Truly, the Todd is such a G, because this assassin spots the dog tracks and immediately like starts walking up on the higher ground, trying to like get a beat on them. Now, I've never been a dog assassin. In fact, I've never been an assassin of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
But I've played a lot of video games. And I gotta tell you, I don't think I have ever in my life, even in my most harried, dishonored run, been like, what if I just stood right on the edge of this cliff?
So it's right on the edge of a cliff that's all rock, like round rock, covered in snow. It's the dumbest place to be. This dog assassin is terrible at his job. And Todd fucking kills him.
Todd, this is the only real murder.
Premeditated.
Yeah, Todd's like you can see it in his eyes, the plan of like, I'm just gonna jump at him and hope this works out. Todd jumps at him, gives him a good snarl, and it causes him to biff his shot.
Shooting off Rolf's collar, which is like, that's a little bit too Western for me, but all right, let's just keep going.
Yeah. I, in fact, the way that the shot is set up, don't even know how that physically was possible, but sure. Shoots off the collar, and then he falls to his death.
So now they have food, that's great.
Yeah. The Todd and the two dogs kind of like walk gingerly towards his body. And then we cut to like a rescue helicopter that's like shit talking this guy.
Oh, you know what? I don't think I did watch the extended edition because I don't remember the rescue helicopter.
Yeah. There's like a rescue helicopter that's like shit talking this guy. They're like, I cannot believe this motherfucker was stupid enough to go out in like all in like near blizzard conditions.
Yeah, I mean, this guy's an idiot.
They were like, I don't care how good he is at hunting, he's like an idiot for doing this. And then they like find the tracks in the snow and they're following them. And then they're like, oh shit, there's like something beneath the cliff. And then they turn on their lights and it's just this guy's like, just absolutely fucked up, eaten corpse. It's pretty brutal.
That does sound brutal. I did not see that bit. So I can understand why that was cut out from the normal release. Let me mention something that I feel like is kind of important, because we haven't mentioned it, and I think it technically happens a little earlier. It's hard to follow both the plot of what the dogs are doing and the secondary plot of what the humans are up to.
Correct.
But I'll just say this. These dogs don't have plague.
They do not.
But this is so dumb in a way that's not like, I don't believe this could happen. I kind of do believe this could happen. It's just that the people doing it must have to be so stupid. This animal testing lab, where they test different animals, some of which come from like exotic locations, like they have chimps in here, also is testing bubonic plague. And we don't know why, except it's 100% to use as a biological weapon.
Right, correct.
So they're testing biological weapon-grade bubonic plague in the next room when they have the dog drowning testing one room over. And what they keep saying is that, like, there's no way they have the plague, but we can't say for certain that, like, one flea didn't get it and then get on the animal. Because you can't say that, even though they
because
know...
Because you can't say that.
Even though they know that they don't, they're like, but maybe they do. And it's freaking people out. It was never clear to me where the leak was, that they did have plague, but the news found out and started reporting it.
This is one of those things that I bet the book goes into in more detail. I did not get there in the book, but from what I was able to piece together in the movie was that the TV reporter we see very briefly on television, the evil scientist says that she got her hands on like a DOD report or something. Not DOD, it's not America, but got her hands on like a Ministry of Defense report.
Okay.
And she was the one who was like, this place is working on the bubonic plague. Do these dogs have plague? And in a scene that is truly amazing, she gets an interview with the head of the lab. And in the middle of that interview, he gets a phone call of the people telling him that his dog assassin has been found dead, eaten.
Yeah. Hilarious.
That's so funny.
This is in many ways like a bleak movie, a grim movie, but this is also a fucking funny movie if you can find the comedy where it is, because the whole dog assassin thing, this guy getting the call during an interview and having to stop this conversation where he's trying to save his livelihood.
Yeah.
From this woman who's gonna be so psyched when she tears this whole place to the ground.
She is on this story.
Yeah.
Like a dog on a sheep.
These dogs have become a national incident at this point.
Well, and at this point, they've eaten a person.
At this point, they've eaten a person, and they've also decided it's time to go. We, like, can't stay here, which is, honestly, they should have made this decision months ago. And what happens is we start playing what I swear to God is 007 music.
Oh, the jazz?
This, so first, we haven't mentioned it, but it was the same in the last movie. But occasionally the musical decisions are just a little wild.
Yeah, I don't know what Patrick Gleason was doing, but I can tell you that what he wanted to do was make a just like a crazy James Bond style exploitation movie.
I don't hate it. It's
very cool.
They're like walking through a half melted creek and it's fucking playing music. Like they're gonna about to get into a shoot off with Goldmember.
Yeah, like they're about to walk into a room with like some
scantily clad woman. Did I say Goldmember instead of Goldfinger?
Did I say the Austin Powers one? Yeah, dog. Yeah.
Powerful that has stayed in my brain.
I think it really says what is more culturally important to you.
When I was a kid, I probably saw an Austin Powers and I definitely didn't see a James Bond.
I think that the two Austin Powers movies are easier to watch now than most of the James Bond movies.
I don't think I'd watch any of them again. I probably wouldn't watch this movie again either.
Yes, probably not. No.
This is, I don't know how you feel about this movie. I'm sure we'll get to it, but I felt like this is one of those movies where I was like, this is fundamentally, I think, a good movie, and I never want to see it again.
Correct. it is not quite as distressing as Grave of the Fireflies, a movie that was so distressing that I never finished it. But it's like kind of on that spectrum of like, I'm glad that I watched it. I do think it's like an important film in the history of film. But goddamn, do I never want to watch it again.
So, Todd, ride or die. He's killed a man for these dogs now, and he's gonna get them out of here.
He's like, I promised you two that I would get you out of here, and I'm gonna do it. Because the entire royal military is after them now.
Now, I think, maybe it's just me, but I was like, why would you bring dogs to hunt these dogs if you genuinely think they have plague? I suspect that the military does not believe they have plague, but this has reached a certain point where they're like, this needs to stop or else this is going to be an even bigger deal for us. So they bring a bunch of like German shepherds, you know, the kind of dogs that can hunt you down.
The real dog assassins.
And Todd kites like six of them.
Yeah. So that these
two can run across this down and get on a train, which I cannot imagine was the plan, but they sure get on a train.
It's not even like a real train. It's like a fucking like Disney train.
Yeah, it's like a tram. But they get on the train. The train is like deactivated, but also still running. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I also wasn't really clear about what was going on there. I guess maybe it was like, I don't know, just in maintenance or something. I don't know.
Yeah. And Todd dies. I saw a thing that said I saw a thing that said that it was up in the air as to whether or not Todd dies. That fox is fucking dead.
He fucking dies. A man lifts up a tail.
Yeah, somebody was. I saw somebody say like, it's unclear because he should have been torn apart. So maybe he was just playing dead. And I was like, no,
he's dead.
Anyway, so Rolf and what the fuck, Snitter. Rolf and Snitter get to the ocean, and Snitter's like, I see it, Rolf, there's an island out there, we gotta go. And he starts going, Rolf is, and Rolf is like, because he doesn't want to, because he hates the water, because he keeps almost killing him.
Yeah, throughout this entire movie, after the first drowning scene, Rolf, like, never really enters the water if he can help it.
It's one of the things in the movie that's done really well. It is character establishment and even character development that's just based on animation. Like, there's this bit where they all run through a creek. Todd runs through the creek, so you know it's like a small creek. And then Snitter runs through the creek. And then Rolf jumps on a big rock in the middle of the creek. And then jumps back across. Like, he won't touch the water, even though it's not a lot of water. But before, when they had to walk through a creek to hide their footsteps, he was sure doing it then. Like, so you know that it's not like, this is a fear he has. It's not wholly debilitating, but it's a fear he has because it's kind of rational.
Yeah. It's a thing that he tells Snitter at the beginning of the movie is like, part of the thing that like gets him to like run away is the fact that he's like, I don't want to die in that tank.
Yes, he wants, if he has to die, he keeps saying this too, he wants to die fighting. He's like, I'm not going to die unless I'm fighting. He doesn't want to die by drowning. He thinks if a man's going to kill him, fine, but he's going to kill him while he's being torn apart.
Yeah.
So they swim and Snitter.
I got a correspondence here from my very brave wife. Which is that the island that Snitter sees is a reflection of the moon on the water. Because Snitter sees an island, that says that he sees an island, and jumps into the water and starts swimming to it. Rolf is like, kind of like touchy-feely about it, but then decides to go after him. And as they're swimming into the morning fog, I guess, Snitter just says, there isn't an island. I didn't see one.
Yeah, I assume this is him gaining some rationality there. But Rolf says, no, there is an island. I see it. And keeps swimming. And makes Snitter keep swimming. And then the movie ends.
It fucking ends.
It ends on this deliberate obfuscation. You don't know if they are alive or not. But during the credits, you do see an island.
There is an island there, but it's not... It's not at all what Snitter saw.
Well,
which is crazy.
Well, but Snitter didn't actually see an island, right? He hallucinated one.
Yeah.
Swam far enough out that there is an island. The question is whether they got there. Now, I think that the subtext of this,
the song at the end.
Well, I think I think it can go both ways. I think you want it to be able to go both ways. That's how Richard Adams wrote it, and apparently, by the way, a publisher made him change it, and there's a happier ending in the book, and also what sounds like kind of a funnier ending. But instead, when they made the movie, he wanted the original ending, which is this, which is knowing that Rolf has been trained to swim for a long time. So, like, maybe he could get to the island and get Snitter to the island, but also knowing that, like, that seemed pretty hopeless where they were. Now, silver lining either way, because during this final chase, we did get voiceover that confirmed that Arse, gonna mention again the name of the institute is Arse, is being shut down because of fucking Corsinus.
Yeah.
They had to get the army out here.
At that point, there was no way that this facility was going to stay open. Yeah, that's the movie.
Yep, that sure was a movie. What'd you think of it, Andy?
I'm not a pet person. I don't particularly have like a desire in my heart for like animal companionship. Mm-hmm. I was surprised at how effective this movie was. And I think maybe it's because even though, like, I don't really like pets, I don't wish cruelty on them.
Sure. I think it's natural human sentiment to not want bad things to happen to animals.
To innocent creatures.
Particularly, and I felt like this was stronger than Watership Down, particularly because these felt more like real animals than rabbits. Whether because it was dogs, an animal that you and I know a lot about because we see and know a lot of dogs, just...
Yeah, yeah. We interact with them pretty frequently.
Right. Which makes humans identify with them very easily. Mm-hmm. Or because it's just less of a fantastical story than Watership Down, which, again, is a downer, but not nearly as much.
Yeah, I guess part of what it is that Watership Down, the rabbits have a culture, right?
Yes.
That they have like a mythos and like a like cultural dream that they're aspiring towards. These dogs just want to live and never really get past that point.
Yes.
And I think the other thing that really hit me, because I was kind of mulling on this this morning, is the fact that a big thing that this movie really gets across is that there is no justice for the victims of animal cruelty, because you can never make them understand what it is that happened to them and how it was punished.
Right.
There is no world in which Roth and Snitter ever got to know, hey, those people that did that to you lost their jobs or are in prison.
I mean, either imprisoned or put in another way more secret lab, because those are the only two options when you have potentially released the bubonic plague.
Right, yeah. But I thought this was a much better film than Watership Down. Like, the animation was less, I don't know, metaphorical, but just stronger overall. It was,
yeah. I think I agree, but I also think I kind of enjoyed Watership Down more. Maybe because it was less of a coherent film and more of a fever dream that I was just like entertained by it.
Watership Down has more like Wolf Quest energy.
It does have more Wolf Quest energy. It's just that this is a very grounded story in a lot of ways, and that makes it not as fun. When we were watching Watership Down, I was like, we need more Ella Rayra. I want more Ella Rayra in this. These dogs don't have Ella Rayra. Shit, man. There's even less Ella Rayra in this, Andy. The Todd doesn't even have like a god. I briefly thought that he might have like a trickster god role almost, but he's just a fox.
He's just a normal fox. He is just the coolest animal and the best friend a dog can have.
Yes. But he's also, like, just the rogue of the party.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. Does that make Snitter the mage?
Snitter, I think, must be, like, the pre-patched D&D 3 bard, which was famously useless.
Just a dead weight.
Sarah's back here like, I'm trying to buff you guys.
Oh no, I had another vision of my house. Oh my god, we didn't even talk about the scene where he gets put in a shed by these women, these British women.
Oh, and we gotta talk about the scene, because I love these women. They're the fucking best. This scene is wild. There are these two dogs outside. They know these are sheep killer dogs. They've heard
that might have the plague.
Could have the plague, but they're eating their garbage, so they're like, so I was like, no, don't do that. Just call the police. And I was like, I'm not putting up with this. Goes out with a broom. Chases off one of the dogs. Only chases off Rolf. And then scoots Snitter into a fucking shed and locks him in there. Like, there, that takes care of that. What are you talking about?
Problem solved.
I loved that scene.
This no, 110%.
This is the fun shit in this movie. It's people making decisions that, like, at the time, you could kind of see them making. Like, I kind of understand why you'd make this decision, but it's also an insane decision.
It felt very, there are a lot of parts of this movie that I do think are intentionally supposed to be funny. Then Snitter is like in this shed. This is one of the coolest scenes in the movie.
Yes.
His memory of his house starts like overlapping with the items in the shed. Mm-hmm. So there's like a shadow that's being cast on the door in such a way that it looks like a cane.
Yes.
And then
yes.
like he starts like is seeing the like curtains and the blinds and the kitchen. It's so cool.
And he says when Ralph and the Tide come to get him, he says, "I'm in my head again. I think I should stay here," or something like that. And Ralph yeah. says, this is maybe my favorite Ralph line, "This is no time for one of your turns." Amazing.
He does, and then, God, he spends the rest of... This is really, like, the moment when, like, Snitter just is completely...
I think this is when he breaks, for sure.
Yeah, he breaks, for sure. Because he spends the rest of the movie just, like, mumbling, like, "I should have just stayed in my head. It was better there." And at one point, when they're hiding from the army, the Todd tells Roth, just make sure whatever he doesn't start screaming.
Yes.
Because we can't deal with that right now.
Snitter will remain one of the stranger characters to me because I just don't see any reason for him to be broken in this way. If he had like PTSD, then I could mm-hmm. understand it as like metaphor. It wouldn't even be a metaphor, it'd just be PTSD, you know? But he doesn't. He has like somebody cut up his brain, and so he just perceives reality wrong. Like, that's it.
It's so, I don't even know how to say it, but like it's unimaginably cruel. Because I guess here's the other thing is, even if they did this and they could prove that it worked, mm-hmm. what use does this have?
Yeah.
What are you gonna, like, oh, and now we're gonna create fucked up human beings who see their thoughts in reality.
Right. In fact, the only thing I think is maybe that's supposed to, knowing this about Snitter is supposed to suggest that maybe they do survive because it would mean that his visions actually helped them literally once. But I don't know. Maybe they just didn't because he has bad visions that don't help anybody.
The tone of the film is such that all I can believe is that they fucking died out there. Because even if they got to an island, right? Like, what next?
Learn how to fish. It's what we always do, maybe.
It's true.
Get to an island, learn how to fish. Thank you for listening to Direct Video VHS.
VHS?
I've been your host, Tony Robusto.
I've been your host, Andy Reyes.
You can find me at inspiredbytrueevents.org, and you can email us at mail@direct2.video.
And you can find me on YouTube at Ethical Games Journalism, where me and my beautiful wife, May, are playing through every Wii game in publication order. We are currently playing Legend of Zelda, the one where he's a dog.
Oh, so, okay, not the one that I assumed when you said that, because there's a Wii Legend of Zelda.
No, yeah, that's the one.
Wait, are there two Wii Legend of Zeldas?
There are, yeah. Well, there's technically three, because there's also Link's Crossbow Training.
Oh, okay.
Twilight Princess is the one we're playing.
Did not realize Twilight Princess was originally released for the Wii.
Well, it was released for the GameCube, too.
Okay. That makes sense. That makes more sense to me. Anyway, thank you.
What are we watching next?
To Scott Buckley for Homeward. What are we watching next? What a good question.
Let me open this up because this is the year of talking animal movies.
Are we gonna get one that's not depressing next?
No, we can. I can change it. Let's do this. I'm going to move up one of these. This is just going to infuriate me, though.
I mean...
I don't want to watch Rover Dangerfield. Maybe that? Is that what we want to do?
We could do Rescuers. I mean, I feel like it would be
good. Is that a happy movie?
I mean, it's a Disney movie. It's much more happy than these ones. I think it'll be a good palate cleanser, genuinely.
Okay, we'll do that. We'll watch The Rescuers.
I don't know if I was up for these other ones. Any of these other ones. I don't think I've ever watched The Rescuers.
Oh, really? I had Down Under, I think, on VHS for a short amount of time, and I was obsessed with it.
Now, here's the thing, is I have watched Rescuers Down Under, because I also had that one on VHS, but I did not... I don't know what happens in the original. I think there's, like, a Cruella de Vil knockoff who has alligators, I want to say.
Oh, that's sick. I'm excited for that.
Yep. And I am the ghost of John Smith.
Now, today we don't watch a real sad movie about dogs.
Yeah, lore accurate.
I forget the name of the rooster. who speaks in this manner?
It's Alan and Dale.
Alan and Dale, signing off.
Just a quick note about the Wii is I have come to realize that it's, like, maybe one of the best consoles ever made.
Yes, 110%.
And one of the reasons I think that is because I saw somebody playing through the Switch version of, like, Wii Sports, and it's fucking garbage. It's, like, it's not even that the games are bad, it's just, like, oh, they don't have Miis anymore.
No!
And the motion controls aren't good anymore, so I don't know why they bothered making it motion controls, because the Switch isn't actually made for that. And it's just like, the Wii was slightly both ahead and behind its time. It was like the perfect console for casual playing and ease of use, but it was like all the graphics and stuff were like a generation behind everything else.
I truly think, so I've in the past couple of years, I've gotten to play some VR games, mm-hmm. and I think the headset technology is kind of pointless. Like, I don't get anything out of it, really. I find it annoying to have to, like, constantly be told by the system, hey, you're walking too far.
I tried playing one of the most popular VR games.
Yeah.
And it was so miserable because it's all moving platforms. And I was like, why in the fucking world would you make this game?
Well, yeah, that's bananas.
When you step, it's supposed to be like Indiana Jones, but it's all moving platforms. And when you step on a moving platform, it makes you sick immediately.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the other thing, is I don't get nauseous really when I play VR games, which is, like, fine. Like, I think I just have there must be something fucked up with my brain.
Your first time running into that? Sorry.
Hold on a minute. I'm my room, it's changing. It's becoming my room, but different. It's becoming my office from work. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, no.
But the motion controls, I was like, if the Wii had motion controls this good...
We would still be playing the Wii.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want, you know, I don't want the headset. I just want these motion controls. They're genuinely really satisfying. It's just the, like, looking around and walking around shit that I'm like, I don't need this. This is kind of annoying. Mm-hmm.